The opinions expressed on this webmasterradio.fm program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of webmasterradio.fm. Any rebroadcast or retransmission of this program without the express written consent of webmasterradio.fm is prohibited.
Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better? It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Life Tips Show, everyone. We're here today with Dr. Lori Mintz. Welcome, Dr. Mintz.
Thank you.
For our pleasure, I'll refer to you as Lori, since we're talking about such a wonderful topic. You are, in fact, the author of Tired Women's Guide to Passionate Sex. It is an honor for me to be interviewing you. Tell us a little bit about the book and your inspiration for why you wrote it, perhaps?
The book is to help tired women regain their passion, and I wrote it because I'm a tired woman who regained her passion and a psychologist who helps other people do the same.
Tell us a little bit about your experience and background yourself, in your own practice and what you've been doing that led up to some great information that we're going to dig into today.
Sure. When I've had my first daughter, my sex drive went underground. It came up again a little bit, as evidenced by the fact I had a second daughter. But then it was totally gone. And as a psychologist, I know how important sex is to life, to marital well-being. So I started trying to fix my own sex drive, and in doing so, discovered the problem was epidemic among my friends and developed eventually a treatment program. And I started getting referrals from women and helped many, many women recover their drive. Wrote it up in this book, and also will add, because I'm also a professor, I've done research on this book and found that the women who read it increase their sex drive by 60%.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's even more exciting is that you're tracking that and giving some data, and that's really, really exciting. Tell us a little bit about the centerpiece of what I believe the book to be all about, which is namely communication, and where the breakdown starts and how that sort of becomes a fundamental element for the methodology that you're sharing with us today.
Well, the book has several steps, and you're absolutely right. Communication is the central step, and my premise of that is that communication is the bedrock to make your bedrock.
And that alone is worthy of a little bit of discussion. When you say communication is your bedrock, you know, are you referring to foundation of six, you know, gateway to success and the foundation from which you begin? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it is actually, in my book, it is the second step. The first is thoughts, but nothing's going to happen in a couple relationship without good communication. It is the foundation. Learning to express your needs, both generally and sexually, is something we are not taught, but it is critical to sexual satisfaction among couples.
Could you talk with us a little bit about behavior and why we get in this rut and why women get in this rut of thinking that a relationship could somehow be satisfactory without that key element of the sex drive?
Well, women usually don't start there. Usually a relationship starts with great sex, but then children, jobs, mortgage payments, stress comes along, and biologically stress decreases libido. And its libido slowly goes away to the point where I've heard so many women say, I don't care if I ever have sex again. And somehow they just let it go, and that's when the problem begins.
How important is humor and laughing and fun to this element of the passionate sex drive?
It's absolutely essential, just like communication. You know, sex is a serious topic. We're afraid to talk about it. But to infuse humor into those discussions, and there's many ways to talk about sex, and I list several of those in my book, including kitchen table sex talks. And humor is a good, important part of both sex and talking about sex.
Mm. And what are your thoughts on how to, change the communication pattern? Do both participants need to understand this problem and be, if you will, diagnosed with the problem? How can this betterment process begin?
Well, it starts with one person wanting to change, and then learning how to speak with the other person. And there's several tips in my book, but two of them that are most essential are I statements and not asking questions that aren't questions.
And can you expand upon those a little bit? And I just wanted to comment on your I statement. Maybe we'll start with that. I want you to tell us why the I statement is important, because typically when I'm communicating, say, with somebody I'm doing business with, if I were to start emails or communicate with them with I, they would actually think, hey, Byron, this is not about you. This is about me. I'm the client here. I don't want to hear what you're all about. I want to hear what I'm all about. So can you change my thinking on that? Because when I first was reading about this, I needed to understand that change and that transition. Tell us about the I part of communication from your perspective.
When you are communicating with someone who you are connected to interpersonally about a hot topic, we tend to use blaming statements. Blaming statements that start with you. You don't seem to want to have sex with me anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. That's going to put the person immediately on the defensive. But if you own the desire is your own, the concern is your own, and I'm concerned because we seem to be not having sex as much anymore. Mm-hmm. It opens the communication. It decreases the defensiveness. And I challenge clients to never, ever start a statement with the word you.
Hmm. Interesting. And so when you're talking about I, expand upon that a little bit. Why is that soothing and disarming and more appealing from the other person's perspective? And of course, I get the whole defensive element, but how is somehow the I, almost opinion more enticing than, say, the critical technique?
I think it's the word opinion that's throwing you off maybe a bit, or maybe I'm not clear. It's not that you're stating your opinion, I think. It's you're stating your wants, your needs, your intimate desires. I want us to be closer. I want us to have better sex. I need us to spend more time together. And that's why it is disarming and opening, because it's owning that you care about that person. You want this for you, rather than it's something that you know everybody else is doing or having and you should be doing better.
Got it. Very helpful. Can you define, probably difficult if not impossible, but can you define better sex for the audience?
I think better sex is not about the way we typically think of it in terms of frequency better sex is sex that stems from a true understanding of one another and of the science behind sexual functioning, so that we're not driven by myths and anxious and evaluating our own performance. And the other thing I will say is that in the best sex, both people are completely self-absorbed.
Hmm. Interesting. When you think about these challenges of having better sex? Is there pressure on us to deliver better sex or have better sex? And what are the typical routes that we think we should go down to have, quote, better sex? And why are we failing in that mission, perhaps?
There is so much hype around sex, so much of it myth-driven and false, that we're all very anxious and unsure about what we're doing without proper information. And it's very difficult, if not impossible, to be anxious about your performance or what your partner's thinking and to be having a good time in bed at the same time.
Before we get to some great tips after the break, I have a question for you about, you know, the general concept of learning about sex and great sex and different sex. What's your take on on the problem of of lack of knowledge of what great sex is or isn't is, and is that a problem in a lot of relationships? And is this monotony that's being experienced and it part of the turnoff, and with no creative variation, where does creative variation come into play? Can you talk about some of the complexities?
Absolutely. First of all, the myth piece is huge. My next book is about the myth. In fact, my next book is about the myth of the vaginal orgasm, and that's one that gives women and men an enormous amount of problems.
Mm. Could you dive into the learning part of it? What's your take on learning? How should couples learn about, about the creativity, the creative potential of a sexual experience?
Communication, again, bedrock to make your bedrock, and there are also a number of fabulous resources out there that are accurate. I'm not talking about doing a web search. I'm talking about, I have resources listed in my book. There's a site called bettersex.com that sells books and DVDs that are all accurate, provide accurate knowledge, learning about sex.
By the way, they are Better Sex is a client of Life Tips, matter of fact, so I'm really glad that you mentioned that. Do you think that there is an important mission that couples need to go on with the learning aspect? Do they have an obligation to look at videos together, even though that's often taboo, for a lot of people, or at least reading about, interesting challenges or exciting opportunities to push creativity. Is that part of this important process of taking it constantly to a level that is of excellence?
Yes and no. If sex is already good and people, the couple mutually agrees that it's fabulous and they really don't have any need for adventurous sex, there's no need to venture any further.
Mm-hmm.
However, I mean, some people are happy with what white bread sex is what I call it, and if both couples are fine, there's no need. Mm-hmm. If, however, one or both want more, different, better, then there is an obligation to look further. And I put it on the same level I put money management, parenting. I think parents have an obligation to get the best accurate parenting information. And this is no different. It's an important part of life, and we should be approaching it with the same sincerity and openness to learning as we are about our child's development.
Let's take a quick break, everybody. Back in just a minute with some more tips and advice on bettering your sex efforts, and back in a minute.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
If you're looking for a new multifaceted SEO and social media toolset, look for the Raven. Raven has the important tools that every internet marketer needs. Raven offers customized metrics for managing link building campaigns, social media campaigns, with campaign reporting and research tools that you can easily manage. Build up campaign performance for your clients and give your team the tools that will make them soar. If you want to increase your internet marketing revenue, look for the Raven. Go to RavenTools.com. That's RavenTools.com.
Think about it. You work so hard with your existing clients. How much time do you have every day to recruit more clients, expand your business, and add more value to your service? Let WebmasterRadio.fm do the work for you. We're the premier business-to-business on-air and on-demand podcast network with shows like SEO Rockstars, SEO 101, and SEM Synergy. We can tailor an ad campaign that includes 30 seconds every hour and a 30-minute special every month, plus the banner ads and links you need to reach our built-in audience and our legions of loyal listeners and podcasters. What you charge in hours for service is all it takes to get started on the fast lane to growing your business. Contact sales at webmasterradio.fm for consultation today.
Looking for an affiliate network that can package every solution an advertiser or publisher needs in one account? Your one-stop source for full-service solutions is AdMedia.com. AdMedia delivers an incredible lineup of specialized XML feeds for local, social, and search, plus the advertising arsenal of PPC, SEM, contextual, display, and more. AdMedia gives your campaign real visibility, from emailers to domain redirects. AdMedia tailors your all-in-one campaign to give your account a real advantage. AdMedia.com delivers cost-effective ad solutions with real conversions. Learn everything AdMedia can do for you today. Sign up at AdMedia.com. AdMedia, strong ROI made simple.
Rock the world with LinkedIn. Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the Internet Marketing Channel. Only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
We're back, everyone, with Dr. Lori Mintz. Welcome back, Lori.
Thank you.
Just wanted to dig into some tips and advice from your book, if you could share just a few of them on the challenges we've talked about today.
One tip that I would start with is that your most for women is and men, but is that your most important sex organ is between your ears, not your legs.
I love that. And could you expand on that a little bit? The gift of listening. But can you explain to us how to put that to work?
Yes. Women who have lost their sex drive have stopped thinking about sex. And in the book, I advise start noticing the sexuality and sensuality around you, and stop what you're doing once an hour or once a day and take a 1 to 5 minute sex break in your mind. Think about sex. Fantasize about sex. Start that organ between your ears working again.
Is the visual element in your mind by the way, this is for both men and women, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, men, of course, may be thinking about sex all day, every day, but aside from that problem, when you're thinking about sex, this is probably a dumb question, but when you're thinking about sex in your mind, are you thinking about, how do I get in that zone? How do I, am I thinking about the whole experience or just the act itself? Am I thinking about the romance leading up to it? Explain to me what a positive kinetic thought is regarding thinking about a passionate sexual experience.
It varies by person. And some people might want to visualize a past exciting encounter. Some might want to visualize a scene from a movie. Others might just want to think about ideas. It's basically whatever works, and it may take some experimentation, but whatever works for that person to get them flowing again.
Mm-hmm. Is there literally a flow problem? Is that your contention here? Is that we are just have a clogging of the passionate arteries, if you will, in our body? And the drive decreases, and it takes an exorbitant amount of energy to get that drive going again. Is that some of the conclusion? Can you expand upon that and explain that, if so?
Stress is rampant in our society. In a survey done by the American Psychological Association, over 60% of people said they were troubled by stress. Stress and sex drive are incompatible, particularly in women. And so, yes, that's what's clogging the arteries. So we need to get rid of the stress. Remember that sex is one of the best stress relievers around, and make clear off a space in our minds and in our time and in our bedrooms for sex.
In your opinion, well, some more tips then on you know, moving the passion to the next level. How about some more tips for us?
One tip is that if it's, and this one is particularly for women who've lost their sex drive, is if it's fun, it's not duty sex.
If it's fun, it's not duty. In other words, it's not my responsibility to have sex with my significant other.
Right. And often what women don't know, and this is back to your myth notion, is that when we are younger, sex, and mostly for men, there's a linear sex thing, drive. It starts with desire, or what people call feeling horny. That leads you to engage in sex. So desire leads to sexual activity. But women's cycles are much more circular. And often, sex, you can think, oh, I don't feel in the mood, but I know it's going to make me feel better once I get going. So I'll start to engage in a sexual activity. And then it turns out really fun. And so desire comes after the activity. But women, even if they've had a lovely sexual encounter and orgasm, they call that duty sex, thinking there's something wrong with them if the sex didn't start with desire. And if they really realize that that's what many women do, particularly tired, stressed women, and that if it ends up fun, stop beating yourself up. That's not duty sex. Duty sex is when you do it and it's not fun.
In the initial courting process, many people would contend there's an actual chemistry happening between two people. Do you agree with that thought? Is chemistry part of your belief? And is this initial chemistry something that we should be striving to always have with us as we continue a relationship?
Yes, on the first part. Initial chemistry is a big part of early relationships, and the sex, that's when the sex is usually intense and breathtaking. And no, we should not be striving for that. That's a myth. No one can maintain that level of constant initial attraction. Can't keep your hands off each other, especially when you're raising children, paying the bills. What we should strive for is to make sure our sex life stays wonderful and connected and exciting and orgasmic, despite the fact that initial high is going to decrease for everyone. And that's a big myth that people buy into.
Can you walk us through some of your tips on vague questions that you referred to a little bit earlier? You have some great examples in the book, in just even taking a general question, you know, like, are you going to be late tonight? And the different ways that you can read into that.
That's part of the communication chapter. And I, along with I statements, I tell people never ask a question that's not a real question. Because what happens is the person either doesn't realize it's a question and gives an answer and gets their head bit off, or they become defensive. So the example you're talking about, if Alice asks Martin, are you working late tonight? And if he thinks it's a real question, he might say, hey, yeah, I'll be home around 9, and feel blindsided when Alice bites into him with, I hate it, you're never home at night. So he was innocently answering what he thought was a question, and it wasn't. And that also applies very much to the question, do you feel like having sex tonight?
Maybe it's just me, but, you know, do you think there's a lot of mind games going on with the way we communicate with one another, particularly our significant other? I mean, this is complicated stuff when we start having to analyze, you know, what we're saying and why we're saying it and what we're really trying to get after and what point we're trying to make. And, you know, are we just at a time, you know, particularly as we get older, where there's just this impasse, if you will, and we can't seem to get at what each other's wants and needs are? Is that the problem here?
I don't think we're playing mind games at all. I think we are not taught communication skills. Mm-hmm. And I have never, over 20-some years of counseling, ever found a couple who has come to see me where communication and miscommunication hasn't been the core of their problem or somehow how they learned to get along better. Part of the problem is we're not taught communication. It's a skill. And that even if we have been taught it, the hardest thing is to communicate about something that has huge emotional importance to us. So I actually think the mind games are about not communicating well, and that learning to communicate while it feels strange and false and weird at first is what decreases the mind games.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that sexual activity is ever being used as a weapon against somebody else? You know, for
yes.
Deep-seated anger and harboring anger or frustration, and therefore saying no, I don't want to make love with you. You know, is it being used as a punishment vehicle?
Often, unfortunately, yes. Mm-hmm. And I go back to communication. If you could actually communicate what you're angry about, the real issue, work it out, and be done with it, reach a compromise about that issue, not withdraw sex or use sex.
Mm-hmm. On an opposite note, can the passionate sexual experience be the ultimate celebration of love for one another?
Yes. Sex can be...
Should it be the ultimate expression?
I don't think there should ever be any shoulds about sex.
Hallelujah. It should be yes, yes, and more yes, positive celebration. But I do want to ask the question again, because I'd love to hear your answer on it. You know, should that intimacy, but you know, that shared between two people... Should that be the celebration of the unity of both people?
Yes, but it can't always feel that way. In that's back to the myth again. Sex, as we age, as we stay with especially one partner over time, there are going to be multiple feelings to sex. One might be a quick, stress-relieving quickie. The other might be a deep and long and passionate expression of love. The other might be that was okay. The other might be a connecting over a mournful event in one's life. There, and that's why I say it can be many, many, many things over time.
Mm-hmm. Got it. How important are orgasms for sexual, for quote, great sexual experiences?
I think they're very important, but it's, you know, everyone's going to have sometimes when they, you know, every sexual encounter doesn't have to involve an orgasm for both people, but sexual encounters where someone is consistently not having an orgasm is a problem.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on, you know, chemical drug induced, Viagra, you know, et cetera. Do you feel that that's a positive or a negative aspect of the experience?
I think a little bit of both. For people who really have an issue, a medical issue where they need medicine, then it's useful. For 95% of people I've seen, they're looking for a quick fix for a really complicated problem, and the research shows that often Viagra works for a bit, and it stops working because those more complex psychological relationship issues haven't worked.
Hmm.
And I'm very... Mm-hmm.
An excellent answer. There's another section of your book that talks a little bit about house chores, and obviously, we don't want to go with this assumption that, you know, the woman's staying home and the man's working. You know, those days are gone, unfortunately. Although it would be great if they were still here, I think, for many reasons, and particularly even the other way around. Because raising kids is so difficult and challenging, and you need somebody there really doing that all the time, I think, for there to be a successful family unity. But aside from that, talk a little bit about the complexity of the household that exists today and the inevitable reality that chores within this nest need to happen, and the importance of that environment and in both people being part of that environment, and with all of the chores that need to be done of cleaning and cooking and dishes and trash being taken out and all of this other fun stuff. Does all of that play into the passion, you know, and the sex drive?
Yeah, research has confirmed what most women already know, and that's that women whose husbands do their share around the house are happier and more desirous of sex. And I help women to say, make it clear to your partner that you're going to feel more sexual desire if while you're doing the dishes, he grabs a dish towel instead of your breasts.
Well said. And talk with us a little bit about gifts, and not just materialistic gifts, but the gifts of poetry, cards, you know, sticky notes, fun, you know, reminders that there's more going on than just the sexual experience. How important is that? And should we, you know, by default be engaging in that activity to increase our passion and the overall drive?
Yeah, if you feel affection, you're going to feel more connected and more sexual. And we stop touching each other affectionately. We stop texting or calling or letting the other person know that we're thinking of them. And I advise couples to touch each other affectionately 5 times a day and say something loving 2 to 3 times a day.
Hmm. Is that an average, by the way? Or do you think that we're really a pretty pathetic romantic society here, and couples are literally going through the day and not even touching one another? Is that happening?
Yeah, I ask my clients before I ask them to engage in the activity, don't change what you're doing, just watch. And they come back and they say, oh my gosh, we don't touch all day. And that really kills sex because you can't go from being an ice cube to boiling water. You need touch to warm you up.
Hmm. Well, listen, it's been just a real pleasure having you on the show today. Is there anything that any final words of wisdom that you could shed some light onto this interesting topic that you think is important to talk about?
The one thing we haven't covered that I'd like to share is that nighttime is not necessarily the right time. Stop thinking about getting into bed at night and that being the time to have sex. That's when people are often least desirous of sex, especially tired women. And think about, try to find creative other times to have sex.
Hmm. And the final element to leave you with is a question to ask you is about creativity. Can you define creativity and how important that is or is not with the overall experience?
I think that sometimes when people say they're too tired of sex, they're not. Sometimes when people say that they're too tired for sex, it may be that they're tired of the sex that they're having. that they're bored. And then that's a time when creativity, trying new things, is really called for. And for that, I do recommend strongly to get on bettersex.com. It's full of ideas, movies, books, games, things to liven up one's sex life.
Well, Dr. Lori Mintz, it's been a pleasure having you on the show today. How would you like people to find your book and or get a hold of you for any questions or thoughts they may have about this the show?
My website is www.drlorimintz.com, and it has a link to contact me, and it also has a link to Amazon.com where people can purchase my book.
Terrific. Well, thanks so much for being on the show today. It was a real pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. Until next week, everybody, I hope your life's a little smarter, better, faster, and wiser, and now more passionate. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.